And I reckon he could have devastated me well, and I kind of wish he had tried his hand at it.
Hi, and welcome to... What is this exactly?
Well, this is a special edition of the Ook Club.
Yeah, well, what I really wanted to do was go bingly bongly boo and be like a, you know, like a disorganizer.
Disorganizer, of course. Which we've just been talking about because we're recording this the same day we've recorded our episode about Jingo.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is on Christmas Eve, just for the record.
Yeah. So happy Hogswatch, everyone. This is our special, yeah, Hogswatch Ook Club episode to say thank you for supporting us for our first year of having subscriptions. There's like a lot of you, there's nearly 60 of you, which is really lovely. And, thank you. Thank you so much. We said we wouldn't do that every episode, but I think we have.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad. Like, I also appreciate it, but I was sitting there the whole time just waiting to go, Hogs listen, because it's a...
Happy Hogs listen, everyone.
Yeah.
Oh, dear, oh, dear. Well, anyway, what we thought we'd do for this special episode is, when we edit episodes, we keep the bits that we think are good, but we have to cut for time, and sometimes they kind of stand on their own. And we thought we'd share a few of our favorites, just a few, from some episodes from the previous year.
So it's basically some holiday circle geometry because here's all the tangents.
Oh, no. Don't make people do homework at Hogswatch time.
Circle geometry is fun. It's not homework. It's a joy and everyone should enjoy doing it.
That is true. Yeah, I can't argue with that.
Yeah.
No one possibly
could.
Now, this is, it's kind of like a clip show, except you've not seen or indeed in this case heard these clips before because they are bits that we cut out.
It's like the recaps on Arrested Development.
Yeah. Previously on Pratchett. No, I think it'll be fun. I think you'll enjoy them. So Liz, we thought we'd share a few of our favorites. What's the first one? What are we talking about?
Well, I mean, I think as the year rounds out, it's good to have some good omens. So I wanted to go back to that episode and talk about some superstitions, specifically Irish superstitions.
Yes. So our guests for that episode were Amy and Jen. You might remember we had two guests because there were two authors. We're hoping to get them back in the new year. Who knows? Hopefully that'll work out because we'd like to talk about the TV show.
And assumedly tomorrow they're both going to be reading it because that was their shared Christmas.
Oh, yeah. So,
thing.
Yeah, hopefully we'll share this with them as well. But anyway, here's a bit where we were discussing the superstitious elements of the plot, which reminded both Amy and Jen of the superstitions they were brought up with.
I, vaguely kind of dipping into my own personal history here, was raised Catholic, however, come from a long line of Irish Catholics. And if you're listening to this and you don't know why I'm making that distinction, I'm trying to tell you we're superstitious, crazy people.
True, can confirm, yeah. Irish Catholic.
Yeah. So I was raised being dragged around to witches as a small kid. I was put in a psychic circle when I was 16 or 17 to get, as they say, appropriate training. So...
Wow. This explains a lot.
Yeah, no, it really does. I'm still really upset that no one approached me to play Agnes. But the whole thing about that is that it does actually give you this amazing almost liberation when it comes to the whole concept of free will, because you think, actually, no, I still have free will. It's just if it works out, then it was meant to be, which is that almost that kind of strange little caveat that you just sort of cling to after.
You also grow up never walking through fairy circles in the back garden. You learn to, which nobody else actually can, so not only will you never walk through a fairy circle, you'll know what one looks like and various things like that. And, yeah, I don't know about you, but my mother, every Halloween, because Halloween is actually a thing in Ireland, would salt, and I still do this to this day, so superstitious, salt my window sills on because you don't want the pooka to come in.
No.
Because the pooka is basically puck, is a mischievous spirit. And trickster thing, and will do all sorts of stuff in your house if you let the pooka in for the whole rest of the year up until the next Halloween. So it's a kind of, you grow up super, super, super superstitious. And just for reference, Irish Catholicism is so superstitious that we actually lost one of our saints at Vatican II because she was too pagan. So
now look, I don't want to pick favorites among guests because I like all of our guests, Liz. But Avril holds a special place in my heart. She's a good friend of mine and has been a guest on at least 3 podcasts that I've been on. I just feel like we're podcast buddies and we'll just keep being on the same podcast forever. So, you can hear her on Splendid Chaps. She's also been on Doctor Who and the Episodes of Death by a friend of the podcast, Lucas Testro. But she's great, and she was on our Small Gods episode.
And I can't remember if I said this in the actual episode, but I had just gotten off a 9-hour flight pretty much and not had any sleep, and I went sort of straight into this.
Oh.
So I'm not sure if that showed.
I don't know that you actually said that to us when we were recording it.
Yeah, like
or not it was on air.
I got back from Hong Kong then I did a bit of rereading and then I came straight to the episode.
Wow. Well, thank you for your sacrifice. I appreciate it. You've had a busy year.
Yeah, I think it's been a real busy year all around, I think.
It's been a killer. But anyway, we had a few interesting digressions in that episode that didn't make it to the final cut, including this one where in the book it's revealed that one of the bishops in the Church of Om was, I think, a cow. Was it in the book? Anyway, as some sort of animal. So we talked about it, and I asked Avril, as a scholar of religion, has an animal ever been a bishop? Is that an allusion to something? I mean, I know Nero made like an ass a senator or something, supposedly. Yeah. I don't know if that's true, but it's certainly the story.
It's more true than the harp, because the harp didn't happen. Because it wasn't invented.
The fiddle, yeah.
Nero fiddling his rhyme.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think any animals have been made bishops.
No, that seems unlikely to me.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'd love to hear if somebody knows differently.
If you know, listeners, please let us know. It doesn't have to be a donkey. It could be any kind of animal.
Yes.
Isn't there a dog that's a mare or something?
Yes, but I think they were properly elected.
Okay.
Yeah, that's different.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Democracy.
Mm.
What about saints? Are there any animal saints?
No.
I don't think
there's
so.
There's a huge discussion about whether or not animals have souls.
Oh, yes.
Mm. So what happens to them after death?
Yeah, that would be inappropriate.
I mentioned that in here as well. Like, yeah. Animals are less important, but the people who are saying that are generally not animals.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's a good storyline about that in Joanne Harris's Chocolat. There's a man and his dog, and he's very religious, and then there's like the evil priest in that town.
Mm.
And so there's a whole thing about, yeah. So that's, if you want to do further reading about that, that's a subplot.
Oh, I've never read the book.
I was forced to at school and I still like it. So,
must be a good book. Sign.
Yeah. So here's the thing we keep coming back to, Blackadder and the links it has with Time Team.
Yes, well, you keep bringing it up.
It's because it's very interesting.
Because for you, he is the guy from Time Team or the guy from Black. I mean, I don't know. I think I've talked about this in one of the episodes, but for me, my Tony Robinson origin was Fat Tulip's Garden and his storyteller stuff. And I had seen him in Blackadder before that, but I think I really identified him as an independent entity through those storytelling shows. So I didn't quite have that strong an association. I've seen a total of maybe 2 episodes ever of Time Team. So, you know.
I don't know. How have you managed to get through life without just accidentally osmosing a bunch of it? It's like I've seen a lot of Antiques Roadshow without ever intending to watch Antiques Roadshow.
Well, look, I don't know. But I
like,
don't know.
Once you start watching, you just have to know how much like that carriage clock is worth. Like you just really have to. And they keep teasing it through all the breaks. And it's just, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know. We'll figure it out somehow.
Well, we've just gone on a tangent on our tangent show, so we should probably we should probably just come back around. So this next bit is about Wiltshire and about Time Team and how all of those things fit together.
And it's from episode 16 with Nadia Bailey. Yeah, he lived in not just in Wiltshire but in Broadchalk.
Wow, that really sounds like a name out of a Terry Pratchett book.
Yeah,
huh?
Yeah. Well, I think you're absolutely right. He took inspiration for that.
Yeah, because they had crop circles and they have like the chalk drawings, like the ancient chalk drawings in the landscape, which I guess is like the giant todger from later. But like,
yeah. I mean, he wasn't born there, but he lived there for a long time. In fact, he moved there around about the time this book came out in 1993.
So that makes sense. Yeah. Like my dad lived in Wiltshire for a while, like I think in the 60s or 70s. And apparently a thing you could do was join like the local archaeological society and just go on digs, which blows my mind because the idea that you could just do that casually on a Sunday, just yeah. find ancient things in this, like, anyway.
It's not something that, I mean, look, you can find just ancient things in Australia, mm. but you usually have to dig a bit deeper because they're much more ancient.
Yeah.
I had a friend who was considering trying to get an Australian equivalent of Time Team. And they told me that they didn't really need archaeologists so much as they needed, like, they kind of needed an archaeologist, but only a little bit. And then they needed more, like, anthropologists and paleontologists because you'd go, okay, last couple of centuries, and then, oh, stuff that could be 50,000 years old. Let's have a look.
So, like, if they're going to do an Australian version of Time Team, what's the Australian version of Blackadder to cast the main guy from?
Oh, that's a tough one. I was going to say maybe All Together Now, but I think they're all. I think he's dead. I was going to say, what's his name? John English.
Mm.
He'd be great. Just imagine him like going out to Australia, going, "What are we going to find out here?" Like wearing a leather jacket inappropriately. I don't know.
I think we're just going to have to get someone from Neighbours, like Harold or someone.
He'd do it. He'd be great. Yeah,
he would be great.
He's up for that.
He gets flustered if someone disagrees with him, and it's great.
Actually, in real life, this is a bit of inside baseball. In real life, he really loves a good filthy joke. He's very little like Aaron Bishop at all.
I'm curious how you know that.
Well, I worked with him.
Oh, wow,
he was a guest star on Night Terrace, and a delightful man he was too. But yes, he does enjoy a bit of a filthy joke every now and then. He was very polite and lovely. Mm. But yeah,
that makes it even funnier.
Yeah, it does. He's not an awful person by any stretch. But no, he's delightful. Ian, if you're listening, thank you. Thank you so much. You're wonderful. Now, this next bit is one of the first times you brought up what has become a recurring theme, although it hasn't always made it to the final cut of every episode, where you bring up particularly freaky TV series from Australian television.
Liftoff. It's just everyone needs to know, and I'm not sure I appreciate you cutting out my very vital message.
Well, look, it's made it into at least one later episode than this, but this is the first time you talked about it, and you were inspired by the discussion we had about Susan's hair in episode 19, where we were discussing soul music with Fury. Yeah. Does she have the shock of white in her hair in this story? I don't think she does. I think she gets that later on.
I don't remember it being mentioned.
No, I think she does. I think she does in this book.
We talk about her hair early on. I don't remember the color. I remember how it keeps springing back to its own shape.
No, I'm 90% sure that she does have the shock of white in this book.
We're all pausing to find that first description.
Remembered her as having it.
It was pure white except for a black streak.
Mm, yeah.
Oh, yeah, right. Oh, interesting. Yeah. Because
it had an uncanny tendency to unravel itself and spring back into its preferred shape, like Medusa's snakes. Yeah, then there's a good...
Is that how Medusa's snakes work? Like, I thought they were moving around all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, why would you have snakes for hair if they couldn't just be moving around and looking at things?
Do you have to shampoo them?
Yeah, but with special snake shampoo. And I hope you can see through the little snake eyes and taste things.
That would be
great. That would be cool. Otherwise, it's just kind of annoying.
For everyone, because like, they'd have their own life. They couldn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. They'd be very frustrated.
It's like that old cartoon where like the lady had horses living in her hair or something, or like little creatures, and then the evil people were always trying to steal her hair creatures.
I don't know what that cartoon
is. This sounds like
is.
A wild show. It was like a kid's show?
Yeah, it was a kid's
from
show.
From the 90s?
I used to get the tapes from the video store.
Huh.
Yeah, I've never been, I can't remember what it's called, but yeah, she had like long hair and things lived in it, and they did, I think it was three of them, and they did magic, and there's one episode where the bad people managed to steal her hair things, and it was... Yeah, I don't know. It's very influential.
The 90s was a wild time for television. Like, just so much got greenlit that I'm just like, I don't understand how this exists.
Like Gummy Bears? Which I didn't, like, a friend described it to me. I'm like, that is not a show. That did not happen. She's like, you know how they jump up and down and they have, like, their gummy bear magic? And I was like, this is not real. You're making this up. And
well, they take performance-enhancing drugs, which is much like Roger Ramjet. So I've always been a bit suspicious.
Or Popeye.
Or Banana
Popeye.
Man.
At least Popeye's, like... organic
spinach. Yeah,
like,
yeah.
There's nothing artificial about that. Or who?
Banana Man.
Oh, yeah, Banana Man. Again, though, nothing artificial about Banana Man's performance
enhancing.
Banana
Man gave me weird feelings. I wasn't super into it. And there was like, there's a bunch, like, I mean, Mr. Squiggle always gave me, I was really into it, but I always felt very disconcerted by it. Mm. And there was that other one, which is kind of more Australian specific. I can never remember the name, but it had like a dummy that just didn't have a face.
Oh yeah. That was EC from,
Well, EC didn't have a dummy. It just, no, I mean, that was the dummy. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It just didn't really have a face.
Do you know why it's called EC?
Why? Yeah.
It stands for every child, because it's supposed to represent every child.
That's why it had a very blank face.
So if you add every child together, it has no face and it moves and it wears a jester suit.
And just like doesn't have a mouth and just talks without a mouth.
The whole of Liftoff is terrifying.
It's so terrifying.
It's like the sentient lift that would sometimes take them to somewhere that's not their house.
I like the backsacks. They were cool.
They were very good. They were the least scary part of that show.
But like the 90s and kids television equals how the hell did this happen?
Yeah.
I once wrote a column about how much the EC doll terrified me in my university student publication, and a girl from my year came up to me and was like, my dad made that.
Oh.
She was very nice about it. She said it was scary to her too. But
yeah. I think I've read that. I think I've read your piece. But I don't know. EC never scared me, but I think I was a bit older when it was on. So maybe if I was younger, I would.
Still scary now.
Oh, yeah, no.
It hasn't just got a face, but it moves.
It's got a face. It's just a very smooth blank face. Anyway, we should probably get back on track.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, right.
Only because I think we've lost all our non-Australian listeners. They have no idea what we're talking about. Don't worry, there'll be show notes.
They will absolutely be Googling it and agreeing with us. Yeah.
You'll be freaking out.
Okay, so considering who our guest was for this episode, which was resident Pratt Cat Asimov, I feel like maybe it's a bit rude that we were talking about a dog in this next clip, and perhaps that's why it didn't make the cut. But yeah, it's dog ears and toilets, which is, I guess, like, those go together, right?
I guess. I mean, this is one of the reasons why I cut stuff out, is sometimes it makes the segue makes sense at the time, but then the individual thing that we end up talking about for most of that bit is kind of, it doesn't really fit the broader theme of the episode. And so you have to lose the bit that leads into it because there's no way to easily separate them. And then, but I mean, look, you'll get the kind of idea. I mean, a lot of these things are just stuff that we try to cut things down for time and to make sure that what goes into the final episode is the best. Yes. Well, yeah, this is a good example of that, I think.
Mm.
So this is from episode 22 with Asimov as the guest, although I don't think he appears in this clip.
Yeah, well, at least not vocally.
No. Yeah, I've only ever very briefly lived with a dog, so I don't have a great, but I feel like it would be awesome.
I've heard that if they have long ears, you have to clip them back, like with a peg, while they eat their food, so it doesn't drag in their food.
I've never seen that, but then I don't know any dogs that have ears long enough that would happen.
Like spaniels, I think.
Yeah, it would be mostly spaniels.
Do you apparently, like, King Charles Cavalier Spaniels were actually bred to keep your laps warm in a drafty castle?
Seems like, I mean, look,
you get know, a blanket.
Before you had a microwave and a wheat pack or a hot water bottle, I guess, but.
Seems like a lot of effort to go to keep your lap warm.
Yeah. Well, I guess if you put a blanket on, but you're already cold.
I mean, they had servant. No.
You wouldn't have a servant whose job is to sit in your lap. Or would you? I don't know.
Well, in Roald Dahl's books, they had that thing where the younger boys were forced to sit on the toilets in winter at his boarding school before the older boys would use them so that they got a warm seat.
Oh, that's... I mean, look, I think we've all experienced the weird, both pleasurable and unsettling feeling of a warm toilet seat, but you're making somebody else do it. That seems a bit rough.
Yeah, no, I'd rather sit on a cold toilet seat than one that I know has been specifically pre-warmed by someone else's posterior.
Yeah, fair enough, yeah. Fair enough.
Because obviously every toilet I've ever sat on has never been used before.
They're all pristine. Yes. Yeah. They've never been...
Unadulterated.
They replace the lid every night. The toilet fairies do it.
Mm.
That's what... I can imagine that being a story told to kids and that then that would become a real kind of fairy in like a kind of Hogfather scenario. Well, but... anyway,
I stayed at a hotel once, like the worst hotel I've ever stayed at ever, and it was in London. And the second morning I went to the desk and there was a line of people waiting for the man. And he eventually showed up with a bag of laundry one hand and a toilet seat in the other. And he gave the bag of laundry to the first man in the queue, who sort of nodded and walked off as though that's why he was there. And I presume it was. And then the toilet seat, he just sat down behind him and then he started talking to the rest of us in the queue. And I was like, can I please have a hairdryer?
Yeah. Okay. Well, Fair enough.
So, yeah, so what I'm saying is I've met the toilet seat fairy.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Well, I feel like...
She got a signature on a toilet seat.
It's touched by celebrity vicariously. Now, we had a great episode with Michael Williams from the Wheeler Centre talking about Hogfather. I mean, all of our episodes have been pretty great. But he had a few anecdotes that were wonderful, and there were a few sort of digressions that we had. We went very long over time.
Yeah.
That discussion. It's very easy with some guests to just get talking. And yeah, this definitely happened with Michael, but there's a couple of bits that we want to share. What's the first one, Liz?
So the first one is one I am naturally quite jealous of, is from when he interviewed Terry Pratchett himself, and he shares a story about what that experience was like. And it is a roller coaster of an experience, actually.
Yeah, let's hear that.
So I'm going to, this is a digression that may not be relevant or not, but it's the name droppiest thing I'm going to say, is I got to interview Pratchett on his last tour of Australia as part of my job, and I was a massive fan already, and I was very excited about it and very nervous about it, and I tried to reread as many of them as I could, and I tried to kind of, I knew when I went in, asking people to silence their mobile phones, I asked them if they had devices that said bingley bingley bing to put them on quiet, and I could tell the room was full of fans as rabid or more rabid than me, and I really wanted to get it right, and he was failing. His health was definitely bad at that point. Off stage, he didn't have much to give. He was quite contained. It was quite kind of sad. But once he was on stage and the audience were there, he was as sharp as ever. He's very cantankerous, but very precise. And one of the things that I was really interested in was death and how important it is in his books, and especially in light of his own mortality having become such a thing as his writing those later ones. And I wanted to ask him about the fact that I felt like when it came to death visiting characters, he always pulled his punches a bit, that he would never sacrifice a character he really loved, that he would always have it around the periphery, that actually he was a sucker for a happy ending. And I couldn't think of any time, even though death wasn't a bad thing necessarily, he still spared his characters from it. And so I was kind of trying to make this point quite late in the interview, and the one book I hadn't read was The Last Hero, which I don't know if you've done yet. And so when I was giving the example, I said, you haven't killed any of your heroes, not even Cohen, who is obviously a candidate for it. And he said, but my dear boy, Cohen is dead. And we had this moment on the stage, and my heart sank. It was just one of those things where you stuff up something fairly integral, and the audience kind of hooted. And I said, I'm so sorry, The Last Hero, I missed it. I've made a terrible mistake. Let's go to audience questions. And I was so full of shame. And he leaned across and kind of theatrically put his hand over his microphone like he was giving Senate evidence. And he said very loudly to me, you're doing better than most. And I was so chuffed by that. It was such a kind of courtesy and a theatrical thing. And I was like, all right, that was my Pratchett moment. And he was not offended by the death thing. He was keen to, like, he admitted it, that he didn't think it was a bad thing for characters, but also he couldn't quite bring himself to do it to anyone who really mattered.
Yeah.
It seemed sad.
Well, I think, and one of the interesting things is that, you know, he writes about so many different little variations of the afterlife, but never a version where you go to meet other people. Like, none of the dead characters ever come back. The closest thing we ever get to actually experiencing an afterlife is when Rincewind goes to hell.
Mm.
And even then, you know, it's not like it's entirely played for laughs. So it's, yeah, I think that's a big thing, is he wrote himself that decision that when people die, they don't come back. And that's an important part of it. So I can understand from that perspective. It's like, I want to keep writing this character, so I'm not going to kill them.
Yeah.
And you're like, fair enough. I wouldn't.
I wonder whether, I think I wouldn't have minded if it decided at some point it was time to let Sam Vimes go. And I know that's a sacrilegious thought, but there's a moment there where I just think Sam's done all the things you need him to do. And I find it interesting. He didn't think death was a horrible thing, but he still didn't want to.
Yeah.
Couldn't bring it home.
Well, it's hard to know, you know, maybe if he had, he had a few more books in him, you know, at the time. We know that he had plans for at least, I think, about half a dozen different things. Maybe he would have.
I'm just trying to imagine what my response would have been to a book where Sam Vimes is killed off. Like, I'm sure he would have pulled it off well, but it would have been devastating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But in the best of ways.
I think that's the thing I was slightly sad about is he's so sharp and so precise and has moments of real poignancy. And I reckon he could have devastated me well. And I kind of wish he had tried his hand at it.
I don't want to. Look, just make when we get up to the last few books of the series, I think we might get devastated. No spoilers here because I know that there's people who, like ourselves, have not read the last few books and are waiting until we get up to them to read them. And if you're on that list, thank you. That's I don't know about you, Liz, but I feel quite touched by that. But I've resolved not to read certainly the last couple of books until we get to them on the podcast, which means they're still a couple of years away.
Even though I still have not emotionally recovered from when I said in a thing that I hadn't read all the Tiffany Aching books, a small girl in the front row who was dressed as Tiffany Aching, like she snorted, like she was like,
oh, yeah.
And I was like, this child is judging me, well, rightly, but.
I just want to do a shout out after that for a listener who probably won't hear this actually because it's not a subscriber, but who wrote us in a very lovely email to say that he hadn't realized there was a Discworld book he hadn't read until we mentioned it on the podcast and we mentioned The Last Hero, or possibly it was because we listed it on the website. And so he found this Pratchett book. He thought he had read them all and then there was one he hadn't read. And what a lovely discovery. So I think I might have to send him just that clip for him to enjoy and realize that he's not the only one who's made that mistake. But there's another bit we want to share from that episode that was a lot of fun, which I personally resonated a lot with. And it was inspired by an early part of the book where Rid Cully is singing in the shower.
The other little throwaway thing in there before the Veruca Gnome appears is Rid Cully's song in the bath he's echoing up. And I'm not going to try and turn it into a song, but the lyrics are, oh, I knew an agricultural worker of some description, possibly a Thatcher, and I knew him well, and he was a farmer, now I come to think of it, and he had a daughter, and her name, I can't recall at the moment, and where was I? Ah, yes, chorus.
Yeah.
If you're going to sing in the bath to yourself, that's the kind of song you should sing.
And I think it's very in character for Rid Cully, who, you know, is from the rural areas and certainly has a love for the countryside, or at least murdering the things that are in it. But at the same time, doesn't really belong there.
I have a question, though. When you sing to yourself, and I'm assuming that you both sing to yourself, do you sing established songs or do you make up songs about what's happening in your surrounds?
Well, both. Often I sing songs that I know and that I love, but I'm convinced it's genetic because my mum does this as well, is that I will just make up little songs to tunes that I know about whatever it is that I happen to be doing. I mean, one of the persistent ones is to sing Cup of Tea to the tune of Hey Jude.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Strong.
You know, I actually have another friend who does that too. So I do that.
I think putting stuff to song makes talking to yourself acceptable. Mm-hmm. So it is that thing of providing a little narrative of whatever you're doing, walking down the hall. Like the more sing-song it is, the more you feel like you're not losing your marbles. Yeah?
Yeah, I do the changing the lyrics sometimes to an established song. So like when I was working at a cinema, an established Melbourne independent cinema, I used to change the lyrics to closing time to whatever I was doing, like sweeping time, cleaning time, ushering time.
Yeah, that's good. I think my best ever one was in high school, which is a shame because no one should ever peek at anything in high school. So I'm going to have to try and do a better one now that I think about it. But we had those demountable classrooms, I think in Victoria you call them portables. So they're like a modular building that can be just propped up on some little supports of bricks, and then you can sort of pick them up, put them on a truck and take them to another school when the school doesn't need them anymore. And they were removing one from our school. And it was being lifted up on the crane. And I just remember that I sang up, up and away in my beautiful classroom. And people were like, what the
hell?
What are you doing? It was not appreciated at the time.
Every time I have to put a piece of IKEA furniture together, I sing Billy Joel's Allentown with the lyrics changed to Allen Key.
Yes.
And that is without fail. I will sing that song with Allen Key as the key refrain. Sorry. That wasn't deliberate.
No.
That's wonderful.
This
That's
is an effect of the podcast is that we make puns.
God, it's contagious. It. It's like Hexen. If you stand too close, just be.
It's just there.
Just absorb it.
So that's kind of a look at what happens to the edges of an episode where we jump off from Terry Pratchett and get into some very interesting areas, which sometimes don't make the cut just purely for time reasons or for narrative reasons.
Yeah.
But it's really nice to be able to give them somewhere to be heard, because these are stories that would otherwise be lost. And I think that'd be a sad thing.
Like tears in rain.
Oh, it's just too real at the moment. Sorry. Blade Runner is too real.
Sorry. I mean, it's the year for it, but still.
Speaking of years, so we're coming up on a new one, and what is it?
The Discworld year, you mean?
Yeah.
It's the year of the condescending carp.
See, I'm definitely going to say year of the condescending fruit bat. Like, fruit bat is my go-to Discworld calendar animal.
It's the century of the fruit bat, which it's not anymore, because that was the 20th century. So now it's the century of the anchovy.
Why is it so marine-based?
I don't know. Well, the fruit bat is not marine-based.
No, but now, like, it's like condescending carp, the anchovy.
Oh, that's true. And the previous year was the year of the something lobster, I think.
Yeah.
The year of the justifiably defensive lobster. Actually, that was the year before. What was this year? I'm confused now.
That's definitely not very efficient.
No. I mean, how do you remember all these things, Liz? How are you supposed to work out how old you are if you forget? I mean, there is a year. There's like a Ankh Morpork year or something.
You
but
can't
still.
Work out how old you are. The time travel stuff like just makes it too, like you just can't.
It's too difficult. And then and are these years, are they a full rotation of the disc, or are they a Discworld half year? Because I think we've discussed this possibly.
Discuss this.
Yeah. Discuss this. I mean, that's another thing. This could have been the discussion podcast, but it's not. But because of the way that the world works, you know, you get two winters and two summers in a full revolution, because you get a summer when you're closest to the side of a Chewin, which is where the sun passes close to the disc, and you get a winter when you're at the front or the back, because then you're furthest away, 90 degrees away from the path of the sun around the disc. So you get two of them. But they just call that a common year, because it's one set of seasons, and then you get the same set of seasons on the other side of the disc. But
so
something
their
must be
years
different.
Are different. But unless the passage of time is the same.
I assume so. I think one of those half years is this approximate length of one of our years. So a full revolution of the disc on the back of a Chewin is something like 700 days.
But it's too many days.
It's a lot of days. I love that kind of stuff. I'm super nerdy for it. I am also glad that he put it in the first couple of books and then just left it alone, because it's like, I've worked this out. I had a lot of fun working this out. Certain kinds of readers will enjoy working this out. This will not be for everyone, and it's not really important to the story. But I love that kind of stuff. Kind of like I love when you read people trying to work out the Game of Thrones astronomy based on the varying length of the winters and all that kind of stuff.
You can't work it out because it doesn't make sense.
That's true. But that doesn't stop it being fun trying to work it out. I mean, not for me anyway. But look, I think we just want to say thank you again for supporting us this year. It's lovely having you. You make it possible for us to make this podcast the way we want to make it. And we're very, very grateful. And we hope you'll stick with us for another year of Pratchett.
Thank you again.
Bye.
Bye. I always sound really sarcastic when I'm saying...
No.
Everything sounds sarcastic when I'm saying it.
No.
Yeah, it's...
Try and say something not sarcastic.
All right.